Pod.
Rugby pod.
Hello and welcome along to this week's Rugby Pod, brought to you as usual by our good friends at Guinness. It's our last pod of the season, so big thanks to Guinness for their support throughout the season, especially with the live shows and pubs all across the UK and Ireland. We've had some great nights, some awesome guests like Chris Ashton and Freddie Burns last week.
Darren Cave.
So we'll be back again for more next season. Goody and Jim are with me as usual for the final show of the season, and we are joined by a very good friend of the show and the newly retired Darren Cave. How are you, mate?
Yeah, good. So far, so good with retirement.
Mate, don't tell me about it. Look at you.
Yeah.
Couple of weeks off, couple of pounds on, eh?
I'm not sure about that. But in Ireland, the contracts run until the end of June.
You don't have to train. So yeah, it doesn't matter.
But you still get fucking paid.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really? To the end of June?
Yeah. So everyone says, how's retirement? I'm like, it is brilliant.
Yeah.
You get paid and you don't have to do anything. But July, there's baby coming and no salary, so we're fucked then.
Oh,
mate, forget the salary, dear. Mate. Forget the salary. Just good luck is all I'm saying.
You did send me a picture from the pool the other day. Is it a real pool or is it blow up in the back garden?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've got a hot tub in the back garden. Yeah, that was me in retirement.
Yeah, nice.
Have you got a hot tub in Belfast? I don't think I've ever seen the sun there ever.
So you look good in it though. I sent you a picture from the gym.
Yeah, you're working hard as well.
I was sweating.
How's the gym going, Goody?
Yeah, mate, good.
What, you've taken?
Anyway,
the
it's not about me.
What?
It's about you two clowns. How was your weekend, guys?
Oh, it was great, mate.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a fucking embarrassment, Jim. That's all I'm going to say.
Dominated the Blenheim Triathlon.
You dominated?
Smashed it.
You came last.
Genuinely.
Did you actually come last?
I came 2,400 out of how many? How many is that out of? Where did you come? Did you get your place?
In the hundreds somewhere.
No, you didn't.
Yeah, I did.
You're talking shit.
Forget everyone else. It's about you
100,000,
two.
100,000, I mean.
It's you about came under 1,000?
Yeah.
It's about you two. So forget everyone else. You said you were going to absolutely dominate Andy Rowe with his bum bag, his cat food and all this stuff. What happened, James?
Hands up. I'm a disgrace. And there was a few things. I underestimated it. I did underestimate it. I didn't think it was going to be as hard as it was. It was solid. So there's a few things actually in the lead up to it. I've never swam in open water. So
excuses, mate. You know what you're going into.
Yeah.
It was the tide. Right. It was the current.
There was a current in the man-made lake. Also, I borrowed my mate Ravo's bike.
Preparation.
Transition. And this is a different kind of transition, this, Cavey. So from your swim to your bike, do you think I can find my fucking bike or not?
Just
I could not find the bike.
It's where you left it, you idiot.
I don't even know what it looked like.
I got
the bike and I didn't even know what it looked like. So I got my transition times. I was 8 minutes looking for my fucking bike in between. And that's a fact. That's on there. So it beeps you in and out. And then the run. This was the worst bit. I literally couldn't run.
We've seen your rugby career, Jim. You couldn't run when you played rugby.
There you go. So running isn't my strongest thing. So you do 750 swim, which I thought I was going to drown, but I got through that. Felt dizzy as fuck when I come out of the water. Three circuits on the bike, no problem. Get off the bike, the run. Holy shit. You're doing two laps, and at this point, you're running where people are watching. So I've got there's 1,000 people there, like, cheering me on.
That's 100. That's him cheering you on, that's one.
So you do one lap, and then you do another lap. Last lap, this woman, no word of a lie, 60 years old. Oh, come on, because I'm stopping, trying to stretch my hamstring. It is tight as fook. She's, don't worry, love, keep going. I was like, oh, cheers for that. Are you on your first lap, are you, love? She's like, oh, no, I'm on my second one. So she's overtaking me. I'm not joking. She must have been about 60 years old.
And Jim's wearing this, like, most people wearing, like, triathlon lycra tops, lycra shorts, and Jim's got this, like, massive baggy T-shirt on that's too big for him, weirdly, and these tiny little bike shorts that look like hot pants.
And then two little twiglets hanging out the bottom of those as well.
Disgrace.
I mean, honestly, Jim, you know, you talk on here a lot, and you're like, oh, it's amazing, I'm the legend. Do you now realise how deluded you actually are in life?
I should apologise to the millions out there that were backing me to win it.
I was going to say fair play to him.
Oh, cheers, Kevin. Oh, no. Thanks, mate.
But for having that much balls to, like, rock up, like, what are you wearing? You've borrowed a bike. You're going around a push bike. You need armbands for the swim.
I've got my goggles. From Asda.
Mate, he had his rubber ring on as well, so that was fine. I mean, that's just his Kent.
And thinking that you're going to be quite good at it.
Well, that's the thing.
What were you thinking?
Arrogance, mate. But I should say, KV, if you're out, I mean, good. You struggle getting up the stairs, as
mate,
we saw last week.
I promise you, if I'd have done the swimming and the cycling, I'd have been ahead of you. I can't run to my knee.
Oh, my God.
I guarantee you.
What do you mean you guarantee?
I guarantee you.
You can't even walk up the stairs without being out of breath.
Mate, 750 metre swim for me is a doddle. I know you can't swim.
Matt, I need to reassess my life. But Andy Rowe, congratulations.
Thanks,
and
mate.
in the next couple of weeks. If you want, if you feel like you want to, you can shave my head. You don't have to.
Well, he said to me he beat you by 45 minutes and he's definitely shaving your head, so let's get that done.
We should say why. We did it raising awareness for the Matt Hampson Get Busy Living Foundation, which if it wasn't for that, I fucking would have walked off and got on my car and gone home.
Yeah, fair play. Mate, great effort.
Cheers, Goody. Thanks, mate.
Is that great sincere? Well done, Jim.
That is very sincere. But I'm just glad you've come back to reality and realised that no matter how much you say it, you're not this legend that you think you are.
I should say hat off to you, Andy Rowe, but I can categorically say, so basically in the Airbnb we were staying in was like two beds and the kitchen had a bathroom. He's having a shower before. Got a glimpse, didn't I? Hell of a bush. You've never seen anything like it in your life.
Where's the Martin Corries?
It was up there.
Wow.
It was your typical Kiwi bush.
Kevin, what do you, now you're retired, have you sort of got any plans on what you might do, things like this? Do you wanting to stay fit?
Mate, you need to. You put a bit of timber on already.
He's full of it.
Are you going to go Goody's way or Jim's way? Or like,
either way is not great.
But Goody looks happy. You know, Jim looks happy as well. Jolene. But, you know, I'm looking at Goody thinking he's three kids, four nannies, drives a nice Range Rover. Good on him. Like.
Have you had time to reflect on your sort of last, or your season or your career or your last few games? Like what's sort of sticking in your mind at the moment?
At one stage it felt like the sort of every week I was putting out some like emotional post, you know, where you're announcing your retirement and then it was the last game at home and then it was the last game. So I was really taking the piss out of it. I was going to say you only retire once, but when the checkbook comes out, good.
This is what I'm saying. So you've just finished your season. You've probably played some of your best rugby over the last 6 months for the Shags and for the first team.
Bit of both.
Why are you retiring? There's plenty more Euros to be earned, mate. I mean, trust me, once the baby's born, first couple of weeks... You fly and you're like, this is amazing.
What bit's amazing?
Just the fact that you can feed your baby. You're like, oh, you know, beautiful thing, blah, blah, blah. And then 2 weeks later, you're like, get me back to work. This is too hard. So you'd want to play rugby again, will you?
No.
London Irish?
No.
Replace Shawnee O'Brien, maybe? Back row?
No.
Will you ever play again? Like that's a question.
I said... after that last game, I said, I'm never, like Chris Henry had a testimonial game in Belfast, like I said last week, I said, mate, can't play, we'll never ever play a rugby game again. 2 or 3 days later, I got a phone call from someone about the Bermuda Classic.
Yeah, you going?
the goalposts have moved, so I don't know if I'm going, I'm thinking about it, yeah.
That's serious now. I've been invited on that a few times, I've just gone, nat.
Yeah.
The Saffers take that so seriously, yeah. They belt people, it's a proper game of ruggers.
Mate, you get a few Islanders in there as well.
Maybe can't.
But... if someone pays you a load of money to play, you'll definitely have a go.
We'll see. I'm only 32, so...
Oh, here he is.
Nah. I want to get in FX and be like Goody.
Is that what you want to do? You want the Range Rover, don't you? You want the nannies.
I want the big Range Rover. Mate, more nannies than kids. He's well-fed, he's happy.
I am well-fed, fucking hell.
What's the word where you're not an influencer? Role model. Yeah, that's you. You're a role model.
Thank you, James.
Looking back at this last season, you equaled the record for most appearances for Ulster. That's a hell of a lot of games, whichever way you look at it. Have you got any highlights that sort of stick out to you straight away?
Zebra away, captain the Shags? Or?
Yeah.
They're the games that you remember, though.
Some of them,
where you've rocked up and it was like, you're thinking, this is absolute shithouse.
We in February, I was playing, we were away to the Ospreys and the game was in Bridgend. We won 8-0 and I was thinking...
I remember that, actually.
This, and like the floodlights...
Hammer down rain.
The floodlights were horrendous, you could hardly see. The changing rooms were flipping a disgrace. Boys fighting over the shitter, like there's only one between about 40 lads. And yeah, half of you thinks it's miserable. It's good fun when you win. When you lose, it's bloody... So it's hard to pick. Playing in a Champions Cup final is pretty cool, although we got hosed. Thankfully, there's probably too many highlights to pick one.
Biggest regrets? I know it's a pretty superficial question to answer, but is there anything there that you? Oh, I wish I did that.
The years I played 13 seasons and we didn't win a trophy. There's a couple of times. There was one year we had home advantage in the final of the league, and because our stadium was getting renovated, so we said the nearest stadium we should play in is the RDS in Dublin. We ended up getting Leinster and lost that geez. Game. Yeah. There was another one. We had Glasgow beaten in the semi-final, and the final was in Kingspan that year, and we got I think it was DTH Van Amerva scored in the last minute to lose that game. So. Either of those things, I probably have a trophy. But, you know, it's very easy, I think, to look back in your career and go, should have done this and should have done that. And I think if you look at it all as one, over the whole thing, I've been more fortunate than I have unfortunate. People always say, do you think you could have more Ireland caps? And I probably could have, but in another life, I mightn't have got any.
Yeah, bottom line is, you are Ulster's joint most capped player ever, which is a hell of an achievement in itself. You play for Ireland, you've been in big games, you've got to Champions Cup finals. It's a career you should be very proud of, and you captained the Shag, so it's amazing.
When I was named to play on that Leinster team, not the quarter final, we played them at the end of the year, and it literally was the absolute Shag. And as the team was getting announced, I was thinking, fuck, the boys are going to be laughing their heads off. Like. And Dan had asked me to captain Ulster, and that's like, that was genuinely a big deal. And then I heard the team be announced, I was going, oh fuck, I'm going to get
keep
hammered
it under 50. Keep it under 50.
We won.
Yeah.
Considering what Ulster's been through over the last couple of seasons, you've left them in pretty good shape.
Yeah, flip, it's been some couple of years for them, hasn't it?
Hell of a turnaround though this year.
Yeah, no, fair play. I think Leinster were there for the taking in the quarter-final, but they were a better team than us. And in the semi-final of the league, Glasgow were a better team than us this year. So I think the club's in a really good spot. I think the ship's sort of been back on track. Loads of good young players, a couple of decent signings. And I see no reason why the team won't be better next year.
That's a great Jimism, that, isn't it? The ship is back on track.
I know, well...
Oh, I didn't even flinch when he said that.
Back on path.
Mate, you don't need to explain to me. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Mate, the best one. Talking about the live shows last week. Talking about Jimisms. Do you remember this one or not?
What, where someone said he's killing it at the minute?
No, you said you've got a strike while the iron's on.
Well, that's what I was... Yeah, that's because someone said, mate, Jim, you're absolutely killing it at the minute. I was like, thank you very much. I'm striking while the iron's turned on.
If the iron's on, Jim... If the iron's on, do you know what it is?
It's hot. It's hot. There you go.
But it ain't even an iron-to-iron shirt that the saying's about, Jim. Do you know that or not?
Absolutely not. Well, what other irons is there? Strike while the iron's on.
Strike while the iron's hot.
I didn't get it, that one, at all.
Now that you're retired, because I know that when you're still in the circle with the players each day, it's hard to be able to open up on people and tell stories. Can you tell us any stories now you're retired?
It's been like a week. Who's the biggest Judas?
Well, that's the thing. I have to be careful what I say. I'm still owed a month's wages at the end of this month.
True.
You know, I don't want to be getting fined.
Yeah, no, true.
Saying anything.
And that means we can bring him back next year. So that's nice. Why? I like that. Mate, you're dangling in the slipper, mate, that's, waiting for us.
That's one of the hardest bits about doing all this stuff while you're playing and while you're leaving. Like, he loves ending, boys.
That's Goody, by the way. He's pointing at Goody.
I just say it as I see it.
You know, I was commentating on an Ulster game earlier in the year and someone did something horrible and I was thinking... What do I say here? Do you know? Because he's my mate and it's tough. I don't like that.
And you thought, fuck him, he's having it.
Let's take a look at the big game from the weekend. Saracens had to work harder than they've ever had to work before for a final victory. It looked like Exeter were going to take it at one point, didn't it?
Oh, it did.
Mate, it did. I was watching the second half. This is bloody rock and roll for you. After absolutely smashed the triathlon in a McDonald's car park, I was watching the second half on my phone, eating a double cheeseburger and...
20 nuggets?
20 nuggets with barbecue sauce. And I even had a Coke for the first time in maybe a year.
How easy is it to have 20 nuggets as well?
Literally, I was swallowing them like they were nothing. So I watched second half there, then I watched the game back yesterday. And we spoke about it and the build-up to it. I'm sure KVU thought exactly the same, that Saracens were going to win the game comfortably. And it was less than comfortable for them. That's the worst I've seen Sarries play in ages in terms of the amount of mistakes that they had, how flat they were. But it's also the best I've seen Exeter. And Jack Knoll, I tweeted about it, was absolutely phenomenal. But yeah. it's a shame because as we spoke about last week, Exeter win the Gallagher Premiership. In my opinion, they should be crowned champions. And then you get put into, obviously, this playoff system, and then you play Saracens in the final. If there's any team, any era, you do not want to play a team, it's now against Saracens. Because even though they nearly got beat at the weekend, if you say the scoreline that I know Exeter scored the last play of the game, you ain't beating them. Simple as that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and we've watched and played in a fair few Premiership finals between us, that's the best Premiership final I've ever seen. Without a shadow of a doubt. It was an unbelievable game. And you talk about Saracens not playing well. They weren't allowed to play well. You know, when Exeter scored the try after the quickest try in Premiership Finals history, Saracens come back and they're dominating for the next 10 minutes. And I'm watching it. I'm there in a box, pint in my hand of Guinness, just loving life. And I'm going, this could be 40 points. 10 minutes after, Nick White scores.
To who?
To Saracens.
Oh, okay.
So Nick White scores straight away from the kickoff. Brilliant play by Cuthbert to go and disrupt the... I mean, Jim would have never dropped that.
I was going to say, that's the second one he's dropped in consecutive weeks.
Used to be friends, hanging out players to dry. That's Jim.
Yeah. I've taught him how to do it.
And then for the next 10 minutes, it was all Saracens. And you're like, oh, Exeter, fair play. They've scored that first try. That's awoken the beast. And the beast was huge. And Saracens were phenomenal. And then Exeter just absolutely... smoked them in everything they were doing. Billy was getting battered
by Kovacic. You said it. You said about the back row. You said if Exeter got a chance,
yeah,
like the back row have got a front up, and I thought Ewers, and that's the best. He was in the England reckoning not so long ago, weren't they?
I mean, they were gang tackling everyone, and they were forcing Saracens to make mistakes, which is what Saracens do to other teams. So it was, Exeter were phenomenal. Saracens, you know, Maratoji talks after the game about, you know, we didn't play well. They didn't play well because of how well Exeter played. Let's, you know, let's tip the slipper to Exeter because they were phenomenal. But it's a game of fine margins, and pretty much every time Exeter scored, Saracens scored a try straight away afterwards. And that's the big thing. When you're trying to bin off a team like Saracens and shake them off and beat them, you know, they've got star quality in their team. So load of big talking points. Massive one, actually, was just before half-time. Exeter are 19-16 up. They're attacking, pick-and-go game in and around the post.
Shot.
Alex Goode, no one's picked this up. Alex Goode was a yard and a half, 2 yards offside. Dave Ewers picks up, and he's offside in front of the back foot, preventing Dave Ewers from going at the post, the base of the post. Straight in front of Wayne Barnes, tackles Dave Ewers, held him up, and then they have the scrum, and then they get the penalty from the scrum, kick the 3 points to go 22-16 up at half-time. But Alex Goode was offside. He should have been. Barnsley missed it. Should have been yellow card, penalty try.
100%. If yours picks that ball up, he's getting to the post pad.
Yeah,
isn't he?
Yeah,
I hate that rule anyway.
Yeah,
I
mean,
but it's a weird rule. But
laws is laws.
Rules is rules.
So that was whatever. But then the other thing, the wonderful try. It was a phenomenal try by Henry Slade, which you think that Saracen's dead and buried, and it was 27-16.
Was that the Skinner offload?
Yeah, Skinner. I mean, that is a. That's a world-class offload. He was phenomenal when he came.
He's class. I don't know why he was on the bench.
See, the thing about Saracens, you always hear about this wolf pack and the tiki-tonga and the culture and all that. Forget about that nonsense. See, when they concede that try, like, they are done. Like, Alex Goode, like, get rid of your bum bag. You're beaten.
Amen to that, mate. Send the nun outfit home, mate.
They're beaten. And then straight from the kickoff, we short one from Farrell. Is it Atoji wins it?
No. This is the thing. So you talk about details. Liam Williams wins it back.
Yeah.
So the first of all, and to put a kick on the money like that.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Farrell. That's
who actually
class.
Didn't play very well as well in the first half.
Missed some kicks that you're like, who's that out there? That's not Owen Farrell. But that kickoff, right on the money, a low one. I've tried that a million times, I reckon, in training. And I'm like, it's going back. Horrible.
Yeah.
He's done that under pressure, and they spoke under the post, and I think Farrell, all the lads have come out and said, Farrell said, we can either roll over and die, or we'd produce some magic. And there he goes. And Liam Williams wins that kickoff back, gets up, a couple of phases later, they score in that far corner, don't they?
But it's that injection of, literally, from nowhere, this quality of that. He wins that ball back, Billy through the middle, Alex Goode throws a ball over the top, Maitland down the edge, back to, and you're almost like, what the?
But that's what I mean.
What was that?
Then the crossfield kicked
off. Of course. But it's the players that you mentioned. Like the names are rolling off the tongue because of their world class. Yeah. Players you've just mentioned. That's what we've always said.
Yeah.
It's no slight on Exeter. They're brilliant. Like we love everything that they do. But Saracens have just got that star quality of players that even if they're not playing well, like Liam Williams in the semi-final, I think, the Champions Cup final, started off the game poorly, makes a try-saving tackle, I think.
Turns the ball over, yeah.
Exactly towards the end of the game. And that's the difference with the players that they've got.
The big thing for me was, so they score that try from Liam Williams straight away. If they don't concede for 5 minutes, I reckon it's game over because you've got to score two tries. So they score straight away. And do you know what? Exeter, perhaps they couldn't have done a lot about that try. Because it was world-class from Farrell with the kickoff. It was world-class from Liam Williams to bat the ball back. Then they play a few phases. Their defence isn't organised because it's off a kickoff receipt. The ball goes over to Maitland, then they stretch them that way, come back the other way, crossfield kick, perfect try. The thing that they'll be really frustrated with, play carried on, they're still in the lead. They get possession back. Maunder, and the big difference, when Nick White went off, we had Nick White on the show last week. Nick White was phenomenal.
Tell his Tash that as well.
I mean, amazing Tash. I actually know the Exeter boys right now are in Ibiza. I've had some pictures been sent over. So they are still loving life. But Nick White's come off. Maunder's come on. He box kicks and it's 10 yards too deep. Nick White's box kicks were on point. And we talked about it last week. A lot of the back three, when people kick to Saracens, Goode, Maitland and Williams, a lot of the time have got so much time to go and do, catch the ball, have a little dance, do what they do. There's never really been many kicks under pressure against Saracens, or not continually. So Maunder puts a box kick up. It's 10 metres too long. Alex Goode catches it, has a bit of a dance, a bit of a break. Then they get to the breakdown, the tackle. And Exeter, because they've been used to this kick to compete and their kick chase has been competing, they can then have their, it's slow ball, so they can then have their defence set out. This one, box kick's gone too long. Goode plays, it goes back a bit further. Their defence is disorganised then. Then fucking Billy Vunipola comes on a short line. And another player that had a big impact was Richard Wigglesworth off the bench.
When he made that break.
And because their defence isn't organised, because it's come off a quicker ruck, because Saracens were returning a kick chase ball, as opposed to being under pressure from a kick to compete, they're all looking at Billy going, geez, someone's got to smoke him. So they all fire up on him. And Wiggy makes his one and only break of the season. And what a break it was.
Offloads to Ralph Aru.
Offloads to old Ginger Nuts.
Yeah, Ralph Aru, mate. who can generate power through them, through the cheesy Watsits, mate.
But then he offloads a ridiculous offload to Jamie George. Yeah. And then they go and score in the far corner. And that puts them ahead. And then once you're behind against Saracens, it's so hard to come back from. And couple of instances in the game that they'll look back on, massive moments that Saracens won the big moments, and that's why the champions.
100% agree. We were chatting last week and we said, what game plan are Exeter going to bring? We spoke about it with Gloucester the week before. We said that Gloucester have got a kicking game and they've got that option to be able to do that. Exeter notoriously hold onto the ball more than anyone. The weekend, Nick White, kick a lot more, man and ball, their defence was awesome off the back of it, and that obviously was a changing point. But also, there was a line out 5 metres out, went through Skinner's hands, I think it was. It might have been Dave Dennis, can't remember who it was. Anyway, irrelevant. Maratoji piles through the line out.
Wins it.
Them small things. And, you know, again, it's easy to open players up and talk about it, but you think a line, it was uncontested. Yeah. And it was just them small moments that make such a big difference in their games.
I mean, that led to Jamie George's try, didn't
it? Yeah, where
Saracens were ahead at that point, so Exeter are probably thinking we've got to go pretty much the length. And it's details.
But you could, that was just after Farrell missed the kick, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And you could see people were going, no, Exeter.
How's he missed that?
They haven't fudged it up, have they? And then whatever happens to the line-out, Itoji somehow gets the ball back, try, game over.
Yeah. And that was the thing, you know, Jamie George, you talk about... as well, and I was chatting to my mate Larry about this actually.
Larry?
Yeah, spoke about it before.
Who's got a mate called Larry?
I used to play at Gloucester actually, back in the glory days. You think about an England captain, and you think, you know, this question marks over Farrell, whether or not he's the right guy in terms of his character. For me, Jamie George, the way that he conducts himself is in the middle of the scrum, he's guaranteed his place in the team now, he's media savvy, the way that he conducts himself in front of camera. I think he's a shout as well.
Whether you think Jamie George for England captain? I, do you know what? I completely agree with you. The only drawback you've got on that is Eddie Jones has always backed Dylan Hartley, hasn't he? And he's like, if I now make the hooker that everyone craves captain...
Mate, Dylan's done, mate. Surely.
No, well, all he's got to focus on is the World Cup and getting fit for that.
Mate, I can't. I'd love to see him come back. I think that, and again, we've spoken about it with Dylan, you know, controversy surrounded his career, really. Obviously missed out on the British and Irish Lions tour for telling Wayne Barnes where to go. Injuries, bans or whatever. To come through, now he's the second most capped England player of all time. I just think the layoff that he's had, and to be fair, if you look at it, where England are thin is probably at hooker. And that moment that Cowan Dickey in that line-out in the game, which was so crucial, probably shows why you need a player of Dylan and his experience in there. But
was it Cowan Dickey's?
It was Cowan Dickey's.
As a line-out, it was his fault, was it?
There needs to be a scapegoat.
A second row never blames himself. He blames the lift or the throw.
It was the timing.
The hooker goes, you didn't jump high enough.
It was a timing, Goody. It was a timing issue. But for me, you know, I've seen pictures of Dylan trolling him on Instagram. For me, he doesn't look like he's going to come back and play in the World Cup. And I'm saying that superficially in terms of he's fully clothed and he doesn't look big enough. And it's a ridiculous thing to say. I think in World Cup, and you look how much the game's moved on in the last year, and Dylan's not really played a lot in the last year, has he?
No.
And you think about how physical the game is now. England want to go out there and win it. As much as Dylan Hartley's done a fantastic job, is he the right guy to be filling a void in behind Jamie George? I don't know.
Do you think, I mean, Goody, you mentioned it before, but do you guys all agree that this is one of the best Premiership finals we've seen?
We might be reacting because it's the latest one. It was a hell of a game. But yeah, the other two that you could pick out were perhaps when Northampton beat Saracens with that try by Waller, was it?
Yeah, in the injury time.
Injury time try, right at the death. And then the other one was Exeter beating Wasps in extra time. That's got a bit more drama about it. But I think as an out-and-out game, that final at the weekend was the best Premiership final we've ever seen because it was a proper ding-dong from minute one all the way through.
And the fact that everyone thought Saracens were going to win, including myself, by 10, 15 points. And Exeter come out, obviously score a try early. Sun was out and, yeah, I thought it was class.
What did you guys make of Merrow getting man of the match?
I didn't agree with it. Don't get me wrong, he played well. Jamie George should have been man of the match for me. Liam Williams had some big impacts on it. Jack Noel was by far and away Exeter's best player, and he was phenomenal. You know, Marrow got the yellow card, and I like Wayne Barnes giving him a yellow card early because he gives a lot of penalties away, doesn't he? He lives on the edge.
It was a team penalty, though.
But he lives on the edge, and, you know, some referees will be more lenient towards some teams than others, and it frustrates opposition fans. But Barnsley said, team penalty, have gone, yellow card, you're done. But Marek still came back on, and because he is so physical around breakdowns, he is going to give penalties away, isn't he? And he had some big impacts on the game. I don't think, for me, he wasn't man of the match.
I don't know. I think if anything in Marrow's game, and again, maybe you're not nitpicking, you're mouse picking, is Marrow. It's his penalties. I think it's always been an issue, hasn't it? And at a point, that'll come back. And like Goody said, and again, you're talking about the top 5% of world-class players in the world. You know, your Marrow's, Farrell with his tackling, stuff like that around Marrow, his penalties could be and could come back to bite him, because if there's anything that's lacking in his game, it's a little bit of his discipline. But who am I to fucking say that? You know what I mean?
That's like me saying that someone's too fat. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
Where do you guys think this Saracens team ranks against like the great list of teams that dominated the Premiership and the Wasps side that won 4 titles in 6 years?
Well, again, like Goody said, because the game has just been, it's obviously fresh in our mind, but I'd still say Saracens. I think you look at the modern day game and you look at the Saracens consistently this season, the past few seasons. Goody mentioned the final that they lost against Northampton. They then went on to lose against Toulon, and that was the turning point. They also went out and got the checkbook out and signed a couple of key marquee players.
Who? Not you, Jim.
After that, and they've been unstoppable since, haven't they? And you look at this season again, we're going to reiterate it and talk about it again if people haven't been listening up till now. You know, the women's won the Tyrrell 15. The young lads have won the A-League title, the Sevens. It's just, it's relentless, the momentum of the club that they've got going on. And the way that the game is now is very different when Leicester just turned professional to where the game is now. And you're having to manage how physical everything is. And yeah, I just think that the way that they conduct themselves as a whole, I'd have to say Saracens, but yeah. I'm going to be slightly biased.
Yeah, I mean, you're looking at 3 teams that have dominated 3 different eras, aren't you? Yeah, the Leicester era was from 1998 to 2002. They won 2 doubles, which is what Saracens have done. The Saracens have now won 3 Champions Cups, where Leicester only won 2. Wasps won 2, but they won 3 Premiership titles on the spin as well. So that era, so Leicester were, you know, the era of Leicester's dominance, which I was very privileged to be a part of, didn't do much, but I was there. We had a phenomenal team and we dominated. And then we got towards the end. Jono retires, Backey retires, Garforth retires, these sort of boys. The era comes to an end. Rowntree's gone. Wasps dominate for a few years. And let's not forget, the reason, and it's going back to what Jim said earlier, the reason we're now having Premiership semi-finals and finals is due to Leicester's dominance back in from 98 to 2002, because we'd won the league by March. So you talk about, you know, we talked this year about ring fencing and dead rubber games and all this stuff. Leicester had won the league in March and there was still 5-6 games to go, whatever. And this Saracens team now, the scary thing for me is what they've achieved so far in 3 Heineken Cups. You know, they've won 4 in the last 5 years of Premiership titles. There ain't many of those players that are looking at retirement now, is there, in that squad? No. Their age profile of that squad is unbelievable. How many players are over? The only one you're looking at in that squad now that's starting, anyone that's got any age on them, is Brad Barrett.
Yeah.
And they've signed, by the way, they've signed Elliot Daly, and they've got Tompkins, and they've got Lazowski. They could dominate, I reckon, for another 5 years.
Yeah, they're in a great spot, and I was unfortunate enough to play against them 4 times, I think, got hosed all times. It's hard for me to compare to the Leicester team. I do think that Wasps team, I think they changed rugby a bit. You know, they were the first ones that started this Sean Edwards blitz defence.
Yeah.
And so in 02, and they started this idea, let's not do this, drift defence, let's get up and start smashing people. And it changed rugby. Yeah. Everyone does it now. Saracens have taken it to a new level. But as you say, Goody, I look at the place Saracens are in on the pitch, off the pitch. It's hard to see. You probably would have said the same thing about Man United a few years ago. It's hard to see how they can make a mess of it. You know, you watch videos of the changing room and they're singing their songs after trophies, and every player in the world is thinking, I was about to say, I don't care about the money. The money's important, but I would love to be in that changing room.
It's the whole club culture and everything. And, you know, people, I tweeted about what a club it was, what a team, what a squad, what a management, coaching group, owner, culture, all this stuff. And people are like, yeah, but what about the salary cap? Salary cap's irrelevant, because it's obviously they've found a way around the salary cap. The worst thing about the whole situation is they're unbelievably gifted. They have so much fun together. They're winning week in, week out. They're winning trophy year after year. And anyone that wants to buy a house around Harpenden or St Albans just can't fucking buy one.
Or
Jim's Luton. Because the property market is all sewn up around there. But, I mean, anyone, and I've said it before, anyone around the world that's playing rugby that says they wouldn't want to be part of that is a liar.
Yeah, and the only reason I have sympathy with the salary cap thing with them is that a lot of their players are homegrown. I don't know how many of their British and Irish Lions are from their academy, but say you create five or six British and Irish Lions, you're going to have a big wage bill.
Yeah.
You know, so do you want to have a scenario where do England want a scenario where Saracens are creating these fantastic players and can't afford to keep them? You don't want that.
No. Yeah, but, but the thing is, with them players as well, and it's like we've spoken about it before, let's just pluck a number out. Say Jamie George is on £500,000 a year.
Rightly so.
And three houses.
Yeah, but yeah, exactly. But for him, and a physio clinic out by Welling. But even for him to be picked up by another team. So there's talk of Alan Wynne-Jones, right, going to Leicester. Now, if Leicester's academy had worked, like Saracens have in recent years, they're not needing to go out there and look for a second row who's... Alan Wynne-Jones is a phenomenal player, we know that. Back end of his career, $600,000. If they've got a player coming through a system, a George Cruz, let's just use a few numbers, $350,000.
He's on more than you were, mate.
What was he? 600 then. He's on 600. Let's say Cruz was on $400,000, right? If he was to go to Leicester, they'd have to pay him $700 to get him there, wouldn't they? So I get this wage, I get the salary cap and stuff like that, and I don't know, I'm guilty as charged because, like I've always said, you want the best, you sign the best.
You got a one-bedroom house in Luton.
The academy you mentioned there is frightening. The number of players that have come through the academy now, and the number I spoke to Kelly Brown on the phone today, and the players that are coming through. I cannot see another team that's going to come close to Exeter or Saracens.
And that's the thing. Yeah, we've seen that Exeter could beat Saracens, and perhaps they should have at the weekend.
Well, they've signed Hoggy as well. Will make a big difference in terms of star quality.
I can't see how anyone, any team, one-off game maybe, but over a course of a season, then you get to semi-finals. How anyone can get anywhere near at the minute Exeter and Saracens, because, and it's frightening, even the Exeter team, there ain't many players in that Exeter team that are retiring.
But the one thing that's so impressive on Saracens is the both fronts. We haven't seen that from Exeter. Like when I was playing and we got Exeter in our group, we knew they were good, but we weren't afraid of them. When we got Saracens, we were going, you know, and that's what's so impressive about Saracens, to be able to cope during November and Six Nations when the England players are away, and then to compete on both fronts. Like it's such, I don't think people who haven't played realise how tough it is, you know, to compete on both fronts. And we have, in the Pro 14, we had the advantage of no relegation, and some of the fixtures aren't as hard as other ones. You can rotate teams a lot. That Premiership is a frick every week. Newcastle were fourth last year.
Yeah.
You know, going on that principle, that means Northampton are the favourites to go down for next year. It's you know, they're fourth. It's absolutely mental.
Pod.
Rugby pod.
If you're enjoying the pod and are interested in helping us out and getting access to even more great rugby content, don't forget to check out our Superfan subscription service. Here's a clip of one of our latest features to give you a taste of what's on offer.
Hello and welcome along to the latest episode of the Rugby Pod Sessions. And I'm joined today by former Leicester Tigers and England hooker George Tudor. How are you, mate?
Good, mate, good.
Thanks for coming in.
No problem. I was in the area, so dragged me off the street, yeah.
Well, what have you been doing in the area today? You've been in London, sort of just...
Yeah, I'd like to say I was working, but actually I was just doing a lunch with Warren Gatland.
So name dropper.
Well, yeah.
You're a big deal or what?
Yeah, pretty... Well, he was the big deal. I was just there with him. I work for an events company, and I'm down in the city about... couple of times a month, maybe, depending on the time of the year, and today was one of those days. So.
How was Warren?
He was in great form, actually, yeah, top form.
Do you speak to him often, or like what?
I wouldn't say, I don't send him a Christmas card or anything like that, but he's one of my favourite Kiwis. He's got a lot of personality, which can't be said for most of you guys.
All right, mate, all right.
he's a top man, actually. Former front row forward, so we have a bit of an affiliation like that. But yeah, we've had him down at our place for sort of three or four times and played against his teams a fair bit of my time, and got a huge amount of time for him as a rugby coach, rugby DOR, whatever we call him. Also, he's a top man, so yeah, really good afternoon.
Do you get a chance to sort of get any insight off him?
It's funny because I suppose normally when you sort of host a rugby lunch or something like that, it's a bit sort of lighthearted and fun, and you don't want to be too heavy with the sort of the rugby, who's your toughest opponent, who's the biggest, all that sort of stuff. But actually, Gats today opened up a little bit on some other stuff around when he first got the job in Wales and how he sort of sustained that sort of level over, well, he's been there 12 years, which again was a little bit of a, almost a bit of a shock to me. I didn't realise he'd been spend 12 years there. But and actually, what comes across is he's a totally driven bloke. He really knows exactly what he wants from his staff as coaches, and obviously the players that are under him. And he knows exactly how to get that across, and knows how to push people's buttons as such. And I think that's a very very underrated quality in someone like Gatland, because you look at him and you think, yeah, he's been a successful coach. Of course he has. He's had some very good teams here. Of course he has. But how do you sustain that success for 12 years? You have three Grand Slams, and I think they won four Six Nations in that time. He's coached on two, nearly three Lions tours, if Penn gets put to paper, apparently. How do you sustain that over that longer period? And then before that, he was a huge success at Wasps as well. And it's really interesting to see how he... First thing he does is he gets in the door and he tells the lads, this is how it's going to be. Basically, not an aggressive way, but it's my way or the highway. We've got to work hard. We're not going to be here to take shortcuts. But at the same time, one of his big things that I got out today was that he's really big on the sort of the family side. So you've got to make sure the guys are happy away from the club, away from Wales, away from wherever it is. Because once they've got a happy home life, and if there's any issues there, they're dining out, iron them out. Once that's all sorted out, then actually getting them to train hard and play hard is relatively easy.
And you can listen to the full episode of that, along with loads of other great content, all for less than the price of a pint a month. So head over to patreon.com/therugbypod to check it out.
Pod.
Rugby pod.
You mentioned a lot of young players coming through. Well, there's a lot of young players on display at the other game in Twickenham over the weekend for England. Only, what, five caps in total against the experienced Barbas team? What do you make of that match?
I thought the Barbas was going to absolutely smoke them.
They've drank a lot last week.
Yeah, they
week,
have. They've been out in London.
I remember we were saying last week at a couple of live shows, we were like, whichever team's playing for England, whoever's playing that team, good luck, because there's some absolute rock stars and some absolute monsters playing that Barbas team. But it shows what you can, you know, the Barbas, obviously, of course they wanted to beat England, and they, you know, they love being part of a festival of rugby and all that stuff. But Joe Marler did an interview afterwards and some interviews before the game, and just said it's the best rugby week he's had, because he's just getting to know people and drink. His liver hasn't recovered yet and all this stuff. And, you know, you've got a load of young English players that, you know, they worked like caves. I watched them defend, and they're flying off the line. They picked up a few tries because the Barbars are trying things that in a normal game the opposition wouldn't perhaps try, but because it's the Barbars, they're trying out the back, flicks here, there and everywhere. You know, Dom Brandt, phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, even to a point of he could have ran one in from about 15, he hands it over. So, you know, they've obviously worked very hard, have England, on defensive structures in a short week together. And, you know, we've got some quality young players in this England squad. And you talk about a lot of those players. You know, everyone talks about what is the makeup of this England training squad going to be. We had Chris Ashton on here last week. The England training squad of 45, that apparently is not going to be announced for another 4 or 5 weeks or something. Whereas a lot of other squads have announced a wider squad already, haven't they? A lot of other countries. You look at the depth of players, and it goes back to the depth of players in England compared to other nations. We've got a hell of a lot of depth.
So many, mate. There's so many good players in England. It's frightening.
Do you see any of those young players, I mean, you mentioned Alex Dom Brandt, making the 45 or making the trip to Japan?
No, I think someone like Dom Brandt, we mentioned it earlier in the season, didn't we? Like, I remember you speaking about it when he was playing so well for Quinns. I think England could do with another ball carrier in the back row.
Yeah,
I really could. I mean, we all know how good Curry is. Wilson's a workhorse. Someone like Dom Brandt on the bench, imagine him in a World Cup training camp getting fit, maybe losing 2 or 3 kegs.
Well, he's lost a hell of a lot of weight this year already, as in he's lost bad weight and he looks good now. You know, I remember one of the interviews Paul Gustard did at the start of the year saying, oh, we've got to work on his uni bod. I was like, amazing. But then, I'd get Dom Brandt in the squad straight away, give him an opportunity. You know, you've got your open size ticked off in Curry and Underhill as the two. But then, by the way, you've got Ben Curry as well, who is equally as good, I reckon. So you've got seven sticked off. Billy's your number eight. Nathan Hughes is going to be in there in the squad as a number eight. Matt Kvesic, how well has he played? Does he deserve a shot? Of course he does in the squad. And then Dom Brandt, you look at the sixes and you name some of the sixes. Mark Wilson has been mentioned. Brad Shields played a bit in the six. Pick Dom Brandt. Give him a go. He deserves it 100%.
Well, we can have a chat to an uncapped Englishman who scored two tries for the Barbars at the weekend. Gloucester's Mark Atkinson is on the line. How are you, mate?
Hi there, fellas. You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. Congratulations on an amazing season for you personally, and obviously rounding it off at the weekend in that game. How was it for you personally playing at the weekend? We'll get straight into it, eh?
Thanks for that. Anyway, it was tiring. I've not really prepared for a game like that for a long time, so I mean, it was a hell of an experience to play against England at Twickenham, and in a sort of the team that managed to run out for it was incredible actually.
Right, enough of the rugby chat. I'm bored of that. Let's go back. Bar's week. How much did you drink? Because I'm listening to Joe Marler and he's saying his liver's not recovered still.
I'm telling you, everything I'd heard about the bar was, I called Hibbs the day that that Pat Lamb got in touch with me. I said to him, like, look, talk me through, how's this week going to be? And he said, he was worried, he was nervous, he said, beforehand. He'd done it once before and he was nervous to go again. And it was everything I could have hoped for and more, I reckon. So, yeah, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, just session after session, in amongst a little bit of training. I think we prepared slightly differently to the England boys, if I'm being honest. But I think our team spirit was potentially better come the game day. And then rounded off with a huge session on Sunday as well. So, I mean, I don't want to point fingers as well, but there was boys definitely still going at Saturday morning.
Wowzers.
Jesus.
And favourite nightclub you ended up in?
Pardon? Favourite nightclub? Is it under-18s or over-18s, the majority of listeners?
Oh, mate, just say Spit on Reynolds, you're fine, mate.
Yeah, I think you know variety of the spots that we may have gone to, so I'll put it like this, we're very well looked after.
I don't know what you're on about, mate. I'm a dad of children, I don't know.
Mark, I should put a disclaimer in here for the millions of listeners that you and I actually met for the first time on FaceTime at about God knows what time on Saturday night. Am I right?
Hello, Mr. Cave. Yeah, good to speak to you again. Yes.
Are you right, Aki? Am I all right to call you Aki now?
Is he fully clothed this time?
That's what I'd prefer. Yeah, we had a fantastic FaceTime, didn't we? I'm actually, it's funny you said that, and I'm actually having a small pint with your mate Bill Burns, the Prince of Belfast, at the moment. So I've just popped out to say hello to you boys whilst having a pint with Bill.
Oh, King Billy, good on him, good on him.
Tell him not to choke on his tooth.
No, he's going all right. He's back for a few days. So, yeah, it was good to speak to you and our mutual friend on Saturday, on Sunday night after the game. I can't quite remember. I think you probably remember less of the conversation than me, don't you?
I'm not sure about that. But, mate, you've had an awesome season. Would you say the highlight was seeing how you matched up against me in a pre-season friendly in August? Or...
You know what? That's what I put it all down to. I know it's been great this year. I think there's massive changes at Gloucester, the way we've sort of been playing, and I think you can see sort of the work we've done both on and off the pitch has come through. And I think, you know, I think the semi-final was probably a fair reflection of the season. I think the best teams in the competition got through to that final, but hopefully we were a fair third for this season. And we're delighted with the finish, I reckon.
And then for you personally, you mentioned it at the start of the interview, probably in the form of your life. Eddie Jones was watching at the weekend. Is there any chat whatsoever? I know the centre's fiercely contested anyway, but have you had any chat at all with him?
No, I've not heard anything. I think, it seems pretty set in stone what he's going with at the moment. And I guess I probably didn't do myself any favours by the shape I turned up in on Sunday. But, but you know what? Sometimes you've got to take those opportunities, haven't you?
Well, mate, yeah, you sound like a northerner, so you're close to Scotland. You got any Scottish blood or not, mate?
No. I honestly, I don't have anything in me at the moment.
He's a hollow man.
No, I've not had any talk from Eddie or anyone at England. So, just hopefully keep head down and keep going how it's gone this season and see where it goes, I guess.
And now, obviously, for all our millions of listeners, what does a professional rugby player do from now till you start pre-season? How long have you got off? What happens over there? How many beers are you drinking for the next month?
Yeah, they've been pretty generous for us. I think we've got another sort of 4.5 weeks off, so just keep myself topped up from the stag / bar's week, I think. I've got my own stag in a couple of weekends' time, so that'll be quite a fail heading to Barcelona for that. And then,
oosh, I can't wait.
Yeah, a few little... It's an open invite. A few little tips apart from that, so it should be a good month.
Mate, definitely. I just wanted to ask another question on the Barbars. So, as we know, there's loads of different characters there, and there's a few superstars as well of the game, obviously playing for the Barbars at the weekend. Anyone that surprised you in terms of the characters, or anyone that you thought, geez, he's a lot looser than I thought, or I imagined?
Yeah, there was some real characters. A lot of the names that I'd heard of before, obviously, and a lot of them hadn't heard of me, which is understandable. I did say to them, on the second night, I was like, come on, hands up, who thought I was a physio on the first meeting? Hands all went up from the Southern Hemisphere boys, which is fair enough. So, yeah, I've very much enjoyed Fekitoa, and also he's a loose character, but a really good character as well.
Did you shower next to him or not?
No, I kept away from that. I don't know,
sweet Mary and Joseph.
Oh, my days. I can't wait to watch him at WASP next year.
Keep my rig away from his rig, that's for sure. But you know what? Most of the boys bought into it, which was fantastic. So, yeah, it was great to see.
All right, Mark. Well, thank you so much for joining us, mate. Really appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks very much for having me.
Good man. Enjoy the stag.
See you, Aki.
Bye-bye.
See you in Barcelona, Aki. Cheers, mate. Bye-bye. Good lad?
Top lad. Can we just go back to Darren Cave here now? So hold on, you FaceTimed each other with who?
Well, I was at a wedding.
Okay.
My old mate Dan Toohey.
He got married?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I missed it. Sorry.
Hell of a bloke.
Sorry,
hell of a bloke.
Mate, he's a good lad, he is.
Yeah, up in the Cotswolds. What a spot, Jim.
Mate,
why are you moving London, Edinburgh, yo-yoing?
Yeah.
Anyway, big Paddy McAllister used to play prop for Ulster. No, he's just leaving Gloucester.
Where's he going?
He's going to Connacht.
There's the rumour mill.
That's signed and sealed. That's not a rumour.
That's facts, James. Fact.
That's signed, sealed, delivered, but there's not
delivered,
a wheelbarrow. Not
literally.
No wheelbarrow, though, no.
No. But you don't props get a bit of wedge. I don't know. I don't know. Probably not. Anyway, somehow
so Aki's steaming.
Aki's steaming.
This
so
is
are
the
we.
This everyone's, is the Saturday night.
Yeah, everyone's steaming.
Saturday night steam, and he's playing Sunday against England.
No, Sunday night. Sorry.
Sorry. He was just
that was
be,
my fault. I said Saturday.
He was going to be the legendary. Best person I've ever spoken to,
and he'll never play for England.
Sunday night was it?
I think me and Paddy and I were more pissed. Yeah, but we were trying to get him to pronounce Nihi Adialokan. That was the drinking game. He was on the wing, and I said, "Can you say his name? If you say it correctly, you don't have to finish your pint."
Well, it's our last pod of the season, but don't worry, you can still get your rugby pod fill over the summer from our Patreon Superfan service. We'll be doing interviews and other extra content over the summer months. You can also listen back to the back catalogue of content, including interviews with Jason Leonard, Danny Cipriani, Andy Powell, James Horwell, Lee Misopawanga, and loads more. Also, if you sign up, there's an opportunity to get access to Rugby Pass TV, where you can watch all of Jim's Rugby Explorer series.
Guilty.
And hundreds of hours of other great rugby documentaries, all for the price of just a pint a month. If you've been considering doing it, now's the time. So go and check it out at patreon.com/therugbypod.
Talking of Andy Powell.
Go on.
He's having a boxing match, isn't he?
What?
He wants to fill Haskell in, doesn't he?
Well, he's offered Haskell out, but he's fighting. I don't know who, but he's looking for sponsorship on his shorts.
All right, boy, you want me to have a go?
Oh, mate, you'd be mad to fight him.
Yeah,
you'd
be mad
get,
to fight you wouldn't him. Get in a ring
mate,
with
get,
him.
Get Bestie in a ring with him, that's all I'm saying.
Who do you reckon win out of Powley and Haskell? I've seen Haskell throw a few in my time.
Really? I had a fight with Haskell in the tunnel once. Edinburgh versus Stade Francais, randomly. Yeah, basically killed him.
I think he's still alive, James.
I don't know, Powley.
Polly.
We're going to have a look at some social media questions. John Ford has tweeted us. A lot of teams have been on their big end of season sessions over the past couple of weeks after their seasons came to an end. What's your best story from an end of season party?
Cave, did you have an after season party or not?
We had a couple of nights out. We lost on the Friday, so we had a bit of a double header, yeah. And then Sunday.
Friday night in Glasgow, wasn't it?
Yeah, but we chartered home, so we got home at like 1:30. So there wasn't much crack on the Friday night, and then there was 2 back to back all dayers.
Fancy
so
dress?
Good fun. Shit shirt.
So
on
come as Darren Cave then, basically.
I just came wearing a sweet Tommy Bow number.
Is that what it is?
And we had good. Sunday started really slow. Everyone was just on the ciders, struggling. And then we ended up getting organising a party bus and going down to Rory Best's house because that was the only way we could get him out.
What do you mean the only way to get him out?
Yeah, well, he
where was
out.
He?
He's at his house.
Why family is he not out?
Family man.
Him we all, mate. Him we all.
He was getting the brownie points because he'd been out on the Saturday, and he said he was having a couple of beers in his house. So he said, let's get the party bus. So we rolled down to Banbridge about 40 minutes.
Hold on a minute. So he's retired from playing for Ulster. He's never playing for Ulster again, and he's gone out on the piss on the Saturday night. I can't double up. Can't back it up on a Sunday.
Well, he did in the end because we went down and got him.
I was going to say, my estimations of the man have gone down significantly if he ain't backing up.
You don't need brownie points after the last game of the season when it's your last ever game. What you need is to go out on the hose and find Titty Von Tramp around Belfast, right?
Well, he ended up having a few beers on the Sunday night, let's say that.
You're nodding.
May have ventured into Monday morning.
Oh, but, did you bump into... No. The Von Tramp?
No, we were in Banbridge, which is about 45 minutes from Belfast, so I don't sure.
Is that where his castle is?
Who, Bessie's or Teddy's?
Either.
They live together.
It was a few quiets.
Irv the Swerve has tweeted in, what is the perceived deficiency in Stu McCloskey's game that has denied him any look-in with Ireland? He's a new Darren Cave when it comes to selection.
New wow. Darren Cave?
Wow,
he's not on the World Cup squad. I went to the World Cup.
He did.
I played 11 times.
Yeah.
Irv, that is... just rude.
So Irv's got nerve.
So Irv has some nerve.
Irv's got a nerve.
I was surprised he wasn't in the squad of Ireland. Have picked, I think, about 45. Rory Scannell from Munster's in there ahead of him. I don't really know.
Maybe it's his beard. I saw him when we were at the Edinburgh airport. Then he's got a shit beard. Maybe that's the reason.
He'll take that. He'll be offended by that. Oh, he no. likes you, backs his beard.
Oh,
he loves,
really?
He loves the podcast.
Oh,
he
does he?
He'll be listening.
That's why I said it.
So I can't say the truth. I can't say he's shitty and he shouldn't be in it.
It's better than Hassel's beard, I should say that. So,
do you know what?
Unexpected? Was it unexpected? Was he gutted? Like, obviously, he's going to be gutted. Like, did he see it coming or did
I'd
he expect
say,
to be in?
A lot of people were expecting him in. He was our player of the season. He was in the Pro 14 team of the year,
really?
All that sort of jazz, yeah. He has been awesome for us this year. And same as my mate Aki at Gloucester, when you're that size and you got decent hands, you know, he is hard to play against.
Mate, Aki's good.
Huge.
I like Aki.
So what's the reasons why he's...
Do you know...
Would Joe ring him and say, meow, you're not in, would he say?
I hope he goes into more detail than that, but... I would be very surprised if he hasn't spoken to Joe. Do you know what? It's normally one of those things. He's probably got, you know, Rory Scannell can cover 10 and is left-footed. It could be something and Stuart's sitting there going, right, well, it's tough for him. He was probably in his head thinking he'll be in the 45. Could he slip into 31? Maybe, maybe not. But to get that kick in the spuds, it's pretty tough for him. So to answer Irv with some nerve, the Swerve's question, I don't know what the deficiency is in his game. And he's been quite unfortunate. Although, at the minute, I don't think he would have quite made the 31. But these things change.
I heard he's got a bush that matches his beard. And it's
you
just
can imagine,
big.
Couldn't
just
you? Too big. He's going to have a proper bush as well, couldn't you? You can imagine.
No comment.
Shall we have a look at the rumour mill? You guys got any rumours floating around? Anything new and fresh?
Well, mate, I tweeted one today before I'd actually read the run sheet about Alan Wynne-Jones. I heard a few whispers about Leicester. Could I see that happening? Yeah, I could. I could, especially because there's talk of Steve Borthwick going as well. Now, they're going to have a relationship from the Lions tour as well. Leicester, without fucking banging the drum, needs something. They need something, and they need something now, and they need something quick. So, yeah, I think, you know, that one is circulating around there, and that would be huge. And I could see why they'd go all out to try and get him.
Any more rumours floating around, boys?
Sean Long.
Sean Long?
Yeah, him.
Move! To where?
To Gloucester.
Really?
I've heard that. I can't tell my source, but he has links to Gloucester and Ulster, this person. And what I heard was that I heard he's done a bit of work at Gloucester. Hold old D-Sips insisted that they bring him in to do their phase sort of shape. And he's basically come in and said that that he needs somebody to be on the forwards about their running lines flat out. And he can't be doing it as a 10. And they need to bring in Sean Long to...
Oh, that's a shame. My mate Timmy Taylor's the backs coach there.
Well, source did say that apparently him and D-Sips get on quite well. And it's not instead of him. I think it's as well as him.
So what you're saying is, and don't be nervous about this because you're hanging someone out to dry, what you're saying is Danny Cipriani is telling Gloucester which coaches they need to employ.
That's not exactly what I said, but very similar to what I said.
That's all you need, mate. So that's fine.
He's the boss. He's the CEO, the boss of the lot.
Well, yeah, the way he played this year, of course he is.
Exactly.
All right, well, should we finish things off with the final good, the bad and the ugly of the season, Goody?
Let's. There's quite a few good things this weekend.
Talk to me.
Well, we'll start with someone else called James. James Rodwell scored his 100th try in his final appearance in the World 7 Series before retiring. He has had one hell of a sevens career.
He's a ginger ninja.
He is the ginger ninja.
Yes, he is. He's a good player.
Absolute legend of a bloke, apparently, according to the sevens boys, who are big listeners to this pod. So shout out to James Rodwell. Sticking with the sevens theme, Fiji becoming World 7 Series champions for the fourth time and the third time in the last 5 years, beating the USA in the semi-finals in Paris to make sure they won the series ahead of the United States. And then they beat New Zealand in the final to win it. Then let's move over to France, shall we?
Why?
We like France.
I love France.
I commentated on a game this weekend where La Rochelle won away from home in the quarterfinals, the barrage. So tip of the slipper to them. They beat Racing.
Really?
Racing 92 away from home. Staying in France. Breathe, my old team.
My old breath, they got promoted.
Breathe, they got promoted. They beat Grenoble 28-22 in the playoff game. It's such a weird system. But
that is the biggest game, I would say, or one of them in European rugby.
Getting back in the top goers.
Well, the way that they do it in terms of the bottom of the top 14 and the top of the pro goers, the pro D deux,
yeah,
that's a great way to do it, do you not think?
Well, what they've done, so one team gets automatically relegated.
Yeah.
One team, Bayonne, won the playoff system to win the championship in pro D deux. So they got promoted automatically. Brief, because they lost the final to Bayonne by the kick from Bustos Mayano, yeah, at my old absolute massive bollocks to be able to kick it. Breve then go to the playoff game against Grenoble, who finished 13 in the top 14 at Breve, and they won.
How exciting is that?
So my old breath back in the top 14.
There we go.
Hopefully that means more work for me commentating on another old team of mine next season. Happy days.
It's all business with you, mate. All business.
Of course it is. Then let's move on to the Barbarians against England game. What a game of ruggers that was. Marcus Smith scoring 26 points. That was pretty good. Alex Dombrandt's performance was magnificent. Joe Marler's post-match interview was pretty special. We had his kids. He's like, "I'll just add, the best time of my life. It's the best rugby week I've ever had.
Where's the fucking money?"
Exactly. It's a fair play to Joe Marler and the Barbars boys and the England boys. Sounds like the Barbars boys had a big old week. Where did they say they went?
They said you'd know.
Oh, I don't know what they're talking about. There's not a gold plate of me being in that place at all. Sticking with the Barbars and England theme, England's women smashed the Barbars, and it was a historic game, wasn't it? And our friend of the show, Nolly Waterman, big shout out to her and tip of the slipper, her final ever game of rugby after a week on the hose with the Barbars.
Yeah.
She's had a phenomenal career, brilliant person. We had a lot of fun with her and her mum in Hong Kong. That sounds weird, doesn't it? Yeah. But it wasn't anything like that. Her mum's a legend as well.
Yeah.
So big shout out to both the Barbarians women's and the England women's team, and especially Nolly. Then the good this week, there's only one place to go, and it's the Premiership final at Twickenham. And it was a stage show outside that I was... No, it wasn't me. But I was hundreds of thousands of people in front of the stage.
And you were sweating like an absolute beast.
I was, mate. Put a dark shirt on because, obviously, you know, dark shirts hide the sweat a little bit better. It didn't really. But it's all about the game. And it was the most points ever in a Premiership final. And for me, the best Premiership rugby final we have ever seen. The good this week has to go to Saracens. Fifth Premiership title. The form team, they've done the double, winning the Champions Cup. What a season for that club. They celebrate harder than anyone else. They play better rugby than anyone else in the Premiership. So the good this week goes to the mighty Saracens. Bad. Couple of bits of bad news this week, unfortunately. We spoke about it earlier. Jack Knowles' injury. He was phenomenal in the game. 15 carries, 54 metres made, 9 defenders beaten before he was forced off with what looked like a horrific knee and ankle injury.
Did it look that bad?
Yeah, he was bent.
He got caught in there with Maitland, didn't he?
Yeah. I'm hoping, it sounds bad, I'm hoping it's just sort of medials or some ligaments.
Yeah, like 6 weeks, 8 weeks.
Yeah, because it could be a hell of a lot worse, the shape he was in. And he walked off, to be fair to him, when I'm like, just get the stretcher out. I don't think he wants to be stretchered off. And some of the touches around the Saracens players coming and shaking his hand. He's a very well-liked character, as Jack Knoll. Came to a live show, didn't we?
With a rucksack on. Yeah. And leggings.
So he's a great guy. Fingers crossed he can recover as quickly as possible because we are going to need him for the World Cup. But the bad this week, now we're going back to France. We're going back to France, James.
Of course we are, good.
It's the last one of the season. We're going back to France. And I talked about it in the good. La Rochelle beat Racing 92 in the playoffs. So the bad was Racing losing their home quarterfinal game. But not only did they lose their home quarterfinal game, they lost the ability to play it in their special La Défense Arena that they've had built because some fool decided to book Canadian-born pop star Mylene Farmer for 2 gigs on the Saturday and the Sunday. Exactly, Mylene Farmer on the Saturday and the Sunday, thinking that they wouldn't be in the barrage game. They go straight to the semi-final. So whoever booked in Mylene Farmer to run a pop concert at the La Défense Arena meant Racing had to move their game to Colombes, their old ground that they played at, where they were absolutely garbage.
Literally, these two sentences sums up
it's French rugby, isn't it? I mean, how mad's that? You got home quarter final. By the way, you can't play at your spanking new arena. You've got to move it to your old tin pot.
Because we've got a woman called Farmers coming to play.
Exactly.
What the hell?
So the bad this week goes to whoever was at Racing 92 and decided that we're going to have a concert on when actually a game of rugby could have been played. So whoever that was got their P45 on a Monday morning from Jackie Lorenzetti. The ugly. There wasn't really anything ugly this week, but you know, I always like to find something ugly.
French?
Not French. Actually, James Horwell, and I'm not calling him ugly, so don't look at me like that. James Horwell, legend of a bloke, great career, but a real ugly kick with the left peg from the touchline with the final act of his career. Goes for a conversion, horrific.
Well, hang on, talk me through it. So he's gone for a conversion and
off his left peg.
Is he left footed or not?
Well, I mean, I don't think
clearly not.
I don't think he's any footed with that. If that's his best, shocking. So it's not really an ugly this week, but we'll give it to James Horwell anyway because it was up there with one of my ugliest kicks ever. So there we go.
Thanks, Gertie. Thanks, Jim. Thanks, KV. And thanks, producer Tim. And thank you for listening as well throughout this season. Don't forget to subscribe, follow us on Twitter, review us on iTunes, and check out our Superfans monthly subscription service at patreon.com/therugbypod. And we'll be back in your ears later in the summer ahead of the World Cup.
Rugby pod.
Rugby pod. Pod, pod, pod.